Welcome back to Match Volume. We're your hosts, Naiba Varenga and Emma Dessau. And today, we are taking it back. A little flashback Friday for you all.
We kind of are, Naib. I don't know if our listeners know this, but this host dream team was formed thanks to a USC podcasting class.
Yeah, we both met in an Annenberg podcasting class taught by our wonderful professor, Willa Seidenberg, where we came in knowing nothing about production or podcast creation, and we've sort of just figured it out together.
Exactly. I, for one, am super glad to have met you and just love calling you friend and co-host of Match Volume.
Wow, thank you, Emma. I couldn't have said it any better myself. This has been such a great experience and I cannot thank you enough for that. But this episode isn't featuring content we made. Instead, we're featuring two interviews that some students in this semester's podcasting section produced.
The first interview is a conversation between USC student Katie Angel with LA chef and author Evan Kleiman. Kleiman is the radio host of Good Food on KCRW, where she shares her love for all things culinary with her listeners. In this interview, though, she talks about her take on how shelter-in-place will affect people and restaurants in the long term. We hope you enjoy.
Evan, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
I know you got into cooking as a young girl, making food and cooking for yourself and your family when you were younger. What's the first ever recipe you remember, and what sort of got you into this passion for food?
My mom was a single parent and I'm an only child, so it was just the two of us. And so I always was expected to help. So how I learned was kind of organically. When I was about 10, a woman moved in next door who was from Boston. Her name was Flossie. And she was an incredible baker. And she's the one who taught me how to follow a recipe in a cookbook. So I'm pretty sure the first thing I ever made was chocolate chip cookies. Probably actually from the bag of the Whole House chocolate chips.
That sounds really good. I was also raised by a single mom, but my love for cooking probably extended to like mac and cheese boxes. So I wish I had developed, you know, the skill for cooking.
Well, when I was growing up, you know, in the 50s and early 60s, there was much less processed food than now. And meals were very different because it wasn't a performance. It wasn't like now where you have all these examples of fabulous food all around you that you can look at on Instagram, on the internet. That's what I think is so interesting about this time we're in right now, where everybody's just in their homes, is I think people are going to realize the pleasure of just getting something on the table and not making a big production out of it. Because if you're doing it every single day, like women used to do, like two or three times a day, every meal can't be super self-conscious. It has to become unconscious. Otherwise, you would go mad.
That's true. I feel like that's especially important for, like, obviously college students to remember is, you know, just being able to, like, sustain yourself with, like, a healthy, like, well-balanced meal instead of, like, you know, the typical pizza and ramen, like, literally 24/7.
Well, there's so many, you know, I was just about to say, just put some vegetables in that ramen.
Yeah. Mix in some spinach. Do anything.
Yeah. Crack an egg into it, you know, give yourself some protein.
Right. So right now, obviously, this is a really terrible time for probably every single industry, but especially the restaurant and food industry. And like, I'm a huge foodie in the sense where I like to go out to eat because I'm not super good at cooking. What do you think is going to unfold from here if this goes on for more than like a few weeks?
I think it's going to be horrible. What's interesting about the restaurant business is that what the consumer sees and what the reality is are very different. I think that most people would be very surprised to understand how fragile even businesses that have big names are. Mm-hmm. The thing about restaurants is that they rely on labor. They're a heavy user of labor. So payrolls are big. Even in a small restaurant, you have these payrolls because you're transforming raw ingredients into, you know, whatever your menu is. And that takes a lot of hands. Typically, most restaurants, I would say the majority of restaurants, are paying next week's payroll with this week's receipts. So that means when this unfolded, people maybe had enough in the bank to last 2 weeks. Those who are really, really lucky, maybe for a month, and those who are in extraordinary circumstances, maybe for 2 to 3 months. And I think that what we're seeing is basically the disintegration of a model that's existed for a very long time of a very fragile workforce.
I think people are now realizing this. Like, I know this is true for me, that, you know, restaurants are way more than just food. It's a feeling. Like, you go with your friends, you go with your family. It's a social place. It's so much more than, you know, I think what a lot of just everyday people realize. So hopefully people are a lot more appreciative and like understanding maybe now.
Well, I think what this situation is doing for everyone, I think, is allowing us to see people that were so marginalized we didn't even see them before. Like grocery store workers, for example. You know, nobody thought about grocery store workers, and now they're like, they're heroes. They're like literally working the front lines. So, and I think that's true for restaurants. I mean, so many restaurants have set up funds for employees, and the National Restaurant Association has a special fund that grants money to people who are really struggling. They've always had that, but now it's much more active.
Do you think this is going to get better as time goes on, or do you think it's going to get worse? Like, is there any sort of nugget of optimism that we might be able to have from this situation?
I think the longer it goes on, the harder it's going to be for everybody, because the longer it goes on, the more people will not be earning money, will not have jobs. I hope I look back and I listen to our conversation and I think, wow, what a downer she was. I think that these days we want to have an answer immediately. We want to start doing commentary immediately on a situation, but I think this is definitely a situation that we will only understand its true impact after it's over.
Looking forward to that day, definitely. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Catherine.
That was Evan Kleiman with Katie Angel.
In our second interview of the day, we're going to make the natural pivot into cybersecurity.
That's right, a harsh turn right here. This next interview was conducted by USC student Brianna Devins and features cybersecurity engineer Galabi Dukely.
The pair discussed the cybersecurity field, how Dukely found his way into it, and how cybersecurity can be a path toward financial security and independence.
This is Brianna Devins with Galabi Dukely.
Hi, my name is Galabi Dukely. I'm a cybersecurity engineer for a defense contracting firm. Essentially, I am the person that designed cybersecurity solutions and networking solutions for businesses. I think that's probably as simple as I can make it.
Yeah, it is a complex field, so it's hard to simplify that. But okay, that's understandable. So I guess in that sense, would you say that your work is creative?
It's creative in the sense that there's never one way to do something. I would say this, that's what makes this field very creative for me, and it's also very collaborative, because everyone brings something different to the table.
So as a cybersecurity engineer, what's your day-to-day looking like?
So when I'm not doing client meetings, then I'm doing like network design or architecting. Part of my day also revolves around professional development. So as a cybersecurity engineer, you're constantly learning something new and you have to really develop your skills. You have to stay abreast of those things. So I try to study something for at least 2 hours a day. So I would say that's kind of typically how my day goes.
It seems like the position that you have, you're constantly learning and you're constantly kind of having to be proactive in your learning. With that said, it seems like you would really have to be passionate about the work that you do in order to keep that level of excitement going. Why are you drawn to this career field, and what keeps you motivated to continue to better yourself?
Cybersecurity is a field that allows many people to make a good living. I grew up with a mother who was a teacher, and I watched her struggle over the years, you know, pouring heart and soul into something that she was really passionate about for 20 plus years, but it didn't always net financial stability or financial gain, in the sense that, you know, teachers, for example, don't really get paid the best. Financially, being in this field, money is not something I necessarily have to worry about. as long as I'm doing the things that I need to do and, you know, bolstering my skills, it'll always be met with some kind of advance in pay. So it makes wanting to do those things a little easier, in my opinion.
Yeah, having the financial stability to, I guess, have peace of mind knowing that the work that you do from your 9 to 5 will hopefully allow you to do whatever you need to do in your other parts of your life. Because you have the financial freedom, what are some of the things that you do outside of cybersecurity?
Ooh, so outside of cybersecurity, there are some passion projects, one of them being a company of mine called Nerdy Black Guys. And that's really to help push cybersecurity and STEM into urban areas, essentially, that don't have the resources needed to be able to push cybersecurity as an initiative within their educational institutions.
What was your motivation to start that company?
So looking around after having been in this field for some time, and I recognized that the field was predominantly white. And there's nothing wrong with that, but in the sense that it lacked a lot of diversity. And I had to ask myself why. I think it was back in like 2015, 2016, Forbes had put out an article that was saying that outside of Caucasians within the cybersecurity space, the next big group of people were Asians. And then only like 1% or 2% were African American. So when I look around my office or when I go to client meetings, I often recognize that I'm one of two African American people in the room. And outside of that, when I'm doing a lot of collaboration with others, I also recognize that I'm one or two African American people on a team. And so I feel like we are severely underrepresented in this space, and there's no reason for that. And for me, I recognized early that cybersecurity could be a financial tool for the African-American community. Because it doesn't necessarily require you to go to college in order to make a decent living. B, if you do go to college, you don't necessarily have to go into a whole lot of debt in order to achieve financial stability or financial freedom as an end result. That's essentially why I, you know, needed to help foster a solution that could help a multitude of people.
As far as Nerdy Black Guys go, where and when can people find this initiative that you're launching?
So my goal is to launch the initiative in the fall of 2020, so not too long from now. And initially, the initiative to help a local area is going to start in Los Angeles. And as the launch is coming, we'll be able to provide more information. So for now, you'll be able to find me at www.nerdyblackguys.com and also on Instagram at Nerdy Black Guys.
Thank you, Yalabi, for speaking with us today. And I look forward to seeing Nerdy Black Guys out in all the local communities.
Thank you.
That was Yalabi Dugley with Brianna Devins. We hope that you enjoyed these interviews.
Match Volume is a production by Annenberg Media through USC's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism. As always, hit subscribe to get easy access to our most recent episodes.
I'm Emma Dessau.
And I'm Naiba Varanga. Thanks for listening.